Greet you all in the name of Jesus. Welcome you to this part of the service. Before we go into the message, just want to, I was thinking as we were looking at the Sunday school lesson and the walls tumbling down, we probably all remember where we were, however many years ago, September 11th. Some more walls came crashing down. I remember distinctly watching in real time as the second plane hit the tower. Another great destruction. That wasn't God's calling people to do that, I don't think, but he had a purpose for that destruction as well, I'm sure. So, to his glory. Anyway, think about accidents. This week I was thinking about close calls in the bush logging roads. Generally, the reason for close calls between two vehicles is because of a lack of communication or misunderstanding. And I was thinking about that, thinking about an idea for a message. Old Edith, I was thinking of having a message on communication. She was all down with that. I thought was happy about that till I started suspecting she was looking forward to me studying into that a little more. But anyway, hopefully you can look at this together. I'm not preaching this because I think I have anything really to say personally in relation to communication. But it's an important part of our lives, communication. How many of you, raise your hands if you've heard of Pacific Western Airlines Flight 314. There's a number of things. I'm not sure if I can be a series or not. Definitely won't have everything covered. Things that we can learn from Pacific Western Airlines Flight 314. This took place on February 11th, 1978. And a number of things happened, all went wrong at once. And one that we want to focus on primarily today is communication problems there. Anyway, this was a 737 flight, or Boeing 740 or 737-200 flight from Calgary to Cranbrook, and then supposed to continue on to Castlegar. It's only filled about one-third full, 49 people on board. And in this crash, 43 of them were killed in Cranbrook, winter day. And like I said, it wasn't just a simple accident, but a series of errors. Air traffic control made some mistakes. There was bad weather, flawed design with the aircraft, mechanical failure, and obviously pilot error, which is usually part of it. In the few critical seconds on the runway at Cranbrook, those things all compressed into a few seconds, and all things went wrong there in a very short time. Still now, 40 years later, it's still considered one of the most bizarre accidents in the history of commercial aviation. The two pilots, Captain Chris Miles, was aged 30 years old, had been flying since he was 19, so a very experienced pilot. First Officer Peter Van Oort was only 25 years old, and he only had 80-some hours on the 737, so pretty new. Anyway, when this flight took off from Calgary, the ATC in Calgary contacted Cranbrook Radio and told them that the ETA for this flight was 1:05 p.m. that was the max time. It pretty much always took about 25 minutes from Calgary to Cranbrook. So they knew that it wouldn't be later than 105, most likely. And at the same time, Pacific Western transmitted their pilot's ETA to their baggage handlers. The pilots had already calculated when they would land there. And this was 10 minutes early than what, 10 minutes earlier than what their projected ETA had been. So at that time, Cranbrook was, well, still is, an uncontrolled. Now it's a mandatory frequency. But at that time, it was an uncontrolled airport, so they had no air traffic control, only advisory information. And even today, they can't give you instructions. They can only give you information in Cranbrook when you land there. It's pilot's discretion, which Redmond will use. Anyway, in preparation for this incoming flight, the radio controller in Cranbrook sent out a snowplow because it was snowing heavily. They had already received or gotten almost 3 feet of snow that day, and there was still more coming down. So the controller sends the snowplow out and expecting this plane to arrive at 1305, and he's going to have enough time, nicely cleared off, called the plow back. And then the last few radio calls at 12:46 p.m., flight 314 contacts Cranbrook Radio and asks for the numbers. And Cranbrook Radio operator said there's no reported traffic. And then at 12:47, he says, and 314, this sweeper is on the runway, has been for some time trying to keep the snow back for you. I'll let you know what it's like when I get a progress report from him. And visibility, not much change in the weather, maybe visibility about 3/4 of a mile in snow. And then 314 says 314 checks. That was the last communication between Cranbrook Radio and Flight 314. So normally, pilots reported to Cranbrook when they passed the Skookumchuck Beacon, coming in from Calgary and over the beacon, and then they'd call and be straight in for the on final for that runway there. But for some reason, when they passed over the beacon, they didn't do this. Why was this communication not followed through with? Were they distracted? That's what they think happened. After signing off with Calgary, First Officer Van Oort switched to Cranbrook, but Cap Miles switched to the Pacific Western's own frequency, and he was apparently visiting but other things. And he was pilot in command. He should have been, he was flying, he should have been on Cranbrook frequency, but he wasn't. Most likely, since he was distracted, the duty of informing Cranbrook Radio fell to the first officer. And since he was so inexperienced, he probably simply forgot. The pilots obviously probably assumed the snowplow would be called off before they arrived. But you see the problem with the difference in the timing. Everybody assuming the other people know what time they're planning to be there. The radio operator hadn't received the update on their ETA. He still assumed they were coming in at 1305. And he thought he had some time here. But the plane was going to be landing 10 minutes earlier than what he thought. And because of the snow being blown up from the plow, the pilots didn't see the snow plow on the runway until they had touched down just 300 meters behind it. So 2 seconds after touchdown, they put the engines into idle, reverse thrusters on. How many of you remember the 737-200 series with the reverse thruster that was actually external, that it would open up behind the engines. Now they've changed all that design, but here, when he called for a go-around, then when he saw the snowplow on the runway, they both pilots slammed the throttles into full power for climbing out to go do the go-around. And there was a problem with design. When these reverse thrusters went back closed, they didn't quite close all the way. And then the reverse, because there's supposed to be a safety interlock, that they couldn't go to full power until this thing had closed. But since it was already transitioning, they were able to get full power to the engine before it was completely closed. It was a few inches open, so you can imagine when this thing was closing, it was still partially open. And when they gave full power, started getting airflow back over that. They were just starting to lift off, and the air caught into that thing and pulled that right back over. So suddenly they had tremendous drag on the left engine. And just everything was happening here within two seconds or 3 seconds, basically. So they started climbing out, and with all this drag on slope, they should have dumped flaps. They should have raised gear. They had full right rudder in to counteract that roll, and they were getting really slow, but they cleared that snowplow by, 10 meters, I think, the wheel over his cab. But then, meanwhile, they realized what was happening with their reverse thruster. So the first officer got up out of his seat, and he was grabbing for that override switch to be able to close that again. Apparently, he got the cover open, but he didn't actually get that thing switched over. And since he got up, they think probably there was a slight hesitation. There wasn't full right rudder going on for a second, and that's when they lost control. If they would have kept full right rudder in, they probably apparently could have done a go-around even with that reverser extended. Anyway, since it was a momentary loss of full right rudder, the plane went 90 degrees and 30 degrees down and crashed into the snow. And basically killing almost everybody except 6 people in the last 4 rows. And all because of people thinking that they knew what was going on, knew what time. Incidentally, since then, they've changed the design of any plane registered to fly commercially in Canada now has to be able to do what they call the Cranbrook maneuver, which is to go from reverse thrust into the go-around successfully. Another incidental thing in relation to communication, one person, John Huscroft, told me about his relative, I think, was supposed to pick up a passenger in Cranbrook on that flight. He went there, and this crash had just happened. What he hadn't been told was that his partner, his spouse, or whoever he was picking up had missed that flight and was actually still stuck in Calgary. Anyway, so much for the trivia. Try to segue into the message now. Just interesting how a little bit of miscommunication can cause such a tragedy. In our lives today, communication probably doesn't often have that much consequences, but our communication still can hinder us, or it can be positive. In Hebrews 13, verse 6, says, "But to do good and to communicate, forget not, for with such sacrifices God is well pleased." So, command here that we should not forget to communicate. We have a duty, we have a responsibility to communicate positively. 1 Thessalonians 5, verse 11 says, "Wherefore, comfort yourselves together and edify one another, even as also ye do." key word in this verse, I think, is edify. We are to comfort ourselves and to edify. We know that lack of communication tends to make the home or church or any relationship stale, and hearts are often neglected. In our time that we live in, we have an advance in technology. And as we advance in technology, we, I think, are probably digressing socially. We have social media, but do we have the social skills still that we need to have? It isn't just teens or 20-somethings that have this problem. I think everyone can be social lacking in one way or another. All right, first part here, we want to look at some of the challenges of communication. First one is shyness. Obviously, we know some people are more outgoing than others. Some people find it quite easy to go to complete strangers and strike up a conversation, while others, not so much. Some of us, it's not our most favorite thing to do. Communicating in and of itself can be a challenge, let alone when we have obstacles to face. You know, some might have speech impairments or something like that. But regardless of our obstacles, God will enable us to overcome and to be successful. He has promised that. You know, when God was calling Moses to speak to Pharaoh about letting the people go, Moses was worried that the people wouldn't hear him, wouldn't want to listen. He asked what would happen if they wouldn't listen. In Exodus 4, verse 10, it says that Moses said unto the Lord, "O my Lord, I am not eloquent, neither heretofore, nor since thou hast spoken unto thy servant, but I am slow of speech and of slow tongue." And the Lord said unto him, "Who hath made man's mouth? Or who maketh the dumb or deaf or the seeing or the blind? Have not I the Lord? Now therefore go, and I will be with thy mouth and teach thee what thou shalt say." And he said, "O my Lord, send, I pray thee, by the hand of him whom thou wilt send." And the anger of the Lord was kindled against Moses, and he said, "Is not Aaron the Levite thy brother? I know that he can speak well. And also, behold, he cometh forth to meet thee, and when he seeth thee, he will be glad in his heart. And thou shalt speak unto him, and put words in his mouth, and I will be with thy mouth and with his mouth, and will teach you what he shall do." So God was angry with Moses for not trusting him. We also may have or face obstacles like having a limited vocabulary or some other speech impairment or something, but we need to be courageous, knowing that God wants us to do our best and that he will give us the power to enable us to overcome or at least deal with our difficulties and to still make it possible for us to be effective communicators. All right, the second one, besides shyness, another hindrance or thing that we might face is not being interested. This is a challenge that we might face in our regular communication. This is probably mainly in communication with our families. There was one study, a professor, West German sociologist, claimed that married couples chat with one another about 70 minutes a day in the first year of their marriage. This drops to 30 minutes a day in the second, and then only to about 15 minutes a day in the fourth. And thereafter, they hardly talk. talk much to each other. And I think we probably have better communication than that, but still probably some truth to those numbers. It seems hard to believe, but the fact is it's easy to have a lack of communication in the home. We go about our day, and when we get home, we can be involved in various other things. We probably have 100 different things that need to be done, and distracted thoughts need to think about, and it's easy for us not to communicate. With the attachments that we have to our electronic devices, it's rare to have a quiet environment where the only sounds are two people talking, engaging in conversation. If we want to have healthy relationships, we need to want to have healthy communication skills. We have to be ready to work at it. It won't just happen automatically. Good communication involves a commitment to keep it fresh and engaging. When you come home, when you ask how your day was, don't just say, oh, it was good. But talk about the details. Give some details. For men, communication in this area might mean coming out of our comfort zone and maybe talking about our feelings. And for women, maybe it means less talking about our feelings, your feelings. We know we each have our things that are go-to, probably, and I think it's for communication to be good, it requires us to expand ourselves, extend ourselves. It may be challenging for us, but if our relationship is going to thrive, then developing good communication skills needs to be a priority. Let's remember, talking and communicating are not necessarily the same thing. And something to remember too is just not talking can be a dangerous thing. Just as we noticed in that story in the beginning here, that was very dangerous in their situation and for ourselves also. Not sharing can be dangerous as well. All right, for number two, look at negative communication skills. There are some negative skills that people have, some of us have. Number one, or first one, is false talk. Proverbs 12, verse 22 says, lying lips are abomination to the Lord, but they that deal truly are his delight. Some people can look you in the eye and lie straight to your face. This is a skill, although it's a negative one. And we know the Lord despises it. God delights in truth. 1 Peter 3, verse 10 says, for he that will love life and see good days, let him refrain his tongue from evil and his lips that they speak no guile. It's a very elementary one, but we should not ever engage in lying or false talk. Next one is smooth talk. Romans 16, verse 17 says, now I beseech you, brethren, mark them which cause divisions and offenses contrary to the doctrine which ye have learned, and avoid them. So causing division and offenses. I'll continue on in verse 18. For they that are such serve not our Lord Jesus Christ, but their own belly, and by good words and fair speeches deceive the hearts of the simple. We probably all know or have been around people like that, have good words and fair speeches, very smooth talkers, skillful manipulators. All have probably seen that they might be in the wrong, but by the time they're done with you, they probably have you convinced that you are the one in the wrong. Then there are those that are skilled in smooth talk and flattery. They will be able to convince you to do just about anything for them. And we might determine, well, next time they won't be able to just talk me into just doing this. And then next time you're there, they're just by their smooth talk, their words, before you know it, they've convinced you again to something that from a distance you can see through it, but not so easy. So smooth talk and flattery. God says we need to watch out for the manipulators and smooth talkers. These types of people have spent considerable time developing their negative communication skills. Another one is unwholesome talk. Ephesians 4, verse 29 says, let no corrupt communication proceed out of your mouth, but that which is good to the use of edifying, that it may minister grace unto the hearers. And then a few verses later, in chapter 4, verse 5, it says, neither filthiness, nor foolish talking, nor jesting, which are not convenient, but rather giving of thanks. And obviously, coarse jokes, lewd comments, swearing, condescending words would all fit into this category of unwholesome talk. I think for too many people, it's too easy to be critical or condescending. It's too easy to let our words be biting or venomous, our speech to be something that it shouldn't be. Some people are good at knowing how to cut people down with a few words. Unwholesome talk is a negative, destructive communication skill. So next one is too much talk. And there's two ways this can be done, and both are negative. First one could be when people say more than they should in as far as too much information, called TMI. And we know the harm that can be done with that. Things that should be kept confidential sometimes are spread around, and those words can't be brought back. It's often can do more harm in the situation than good, even though the person sharing it might have a good heart and just want to help. But sharing information that should be kept confidential is a wrong kind of communication. Gossiping would fit into this category as well. Proverbs 20, verse 19. As he that goeth about as a talebearer revealeth secrets, therefore meddle not with him that flattereth with his lips. And the second one is you have a person who never shuts up, or sometimes it's incredible how some people can just go on and on talking for hours. And I guess if it's edifying, then it's good, but often it's not. If all I'm doing is talking, if I'm just being the one talking, not allowing others, then I'm being rude and obnoxious. Then I'm showing that I'm not interested in what you have to say, and I only care about you listening to me. It's one woman, Margaret Miller, had this quote, most conversations are simply monologues delivered in the presence of a witness. Interesting. Most conversations are simply monologues delivered in the presence of a witness. There's a story told of three boys bragging about their fathers. You've all heard these stories about boys bragging. Well, first one says, my dad is so smart, he can talk for 1 hour on any subject. Well, the second one wasn't going to be outdone. He said, my dad is so smart, he can talk for 2 hours on any subject. Finally, the third one says, my dad is so smart, he can talk for 3 hours and he doesn't even need a subject. I think some of us, probably too easy to be that last category. Proverbs 21, verse 23 says, "Whosoever keepeth his mouth and his tongue keepeth his soul from trouble." The person who talks too much or shares too much does not have a guard on their mouth. So talking too much is also a negative communication skill. All right, I want to look at the positive side, positive communication skills. First one is listening skills. James 1 verse 19 says, "Wherefore, my beloved brethren, let every man be swift to hear, slow to speak, slow to wrath." So listening involves paying attention to what is being said, not just facing the person and acting like we're listening, but actually paying attention. Often we may not be talking, but we are thinking of talking. We've latched on to something that the other person has said and we want to respond, and that's when we quit listening, isn't it? I think it's easy to notice this in someone else, and it's irritating when someone else does that, when you can tell that they've stopped listening to what you're saying and they're just waiting for their turn. It's a challenge for me. In doing so, when we do that, we miss out on everything that is said later. And if we were to listen until someone else is done talking, we would probably have a better response. Another part of good listening is to maintain good eye contact. This helps us to focus on the other person and also shows the other person that we are focused. Another way to be a good listener is when we can, or when we do, reiterate back to the other person what they have said. When we can, if you respond so they can tell that we understood what they were saying, not just the words that they said. If after you are done talking, I respond to you with words or questions that reflect what you were talking about, makes sense to me and I understood, shows that I was listening to you. Words such as, "Tell me more," or "How did that make you feel?" Or, "Do you have anything, that idea of how you're going to respond to this?" Or ways that we can share, show that we were engaged in this conversation. When someone is talking, we need to care enough to really listen to them, to show they are important. It shows that what they have to say matters to us. Also, give time for a response. Sometimes our tendency might be, if we share something, and I think it's probably more on this side of the house, share something with men, they would like us to engage and communicate immediately. But remember, some of us need more time to filter things, more time to come up with a response. Sometimes we need to maybe let things percolate for a while, maybe so that the emotions aren't as high either. But I think it's important to set a time, and this isn't my idea, just things I've read, but maybe to set a time that we'll revisit this conversation at a later specific time, and then expect the other person to have some kind of response or something to contribute as well. And this is just touching the surface. I obviously won't get through all of the things people have said helps for developing these skills. But the next skill is resolving conflict. Many of us, or most of us, probably have skills in starting or feeding conflicts, but do we have skills in resolving conflicts? Proverbs 15 verse 1 says, "A soft answer turneth away wrath, but grievous words stir up anger." We've probably all seen the results of that. Maybe we've all been able to do that at some time, some point, to give a soft answer, and just amazed how quickly it can de-escalate a situation. And the opposite is also true. Proverbs 18, verse 21 says, "Death and life are in the power of the tongue, and they that love it shall eat the fruit thereof." Power of the tongue, death and life, both. And then Proverbs 17, verse 14 says, "The beginning of strife is as when one..." Sorry, start over. "The beginning of strife is as when one letteth out water. Therefore leave off contention before it be meddled with." When an argument starts and two people start getting into it, it just escalates. And then, like it says here, water's being let out, or it says like a dam bursting. Everything comes gushing out, and often things are said that later people wish that wouldn't have said, but the dam has already broken and it's too late at that point. If you enjoy good communication, if you have tried to develop good communication skills, you will try to resolve conflict instead of trying to make matters worse. Some people, you know, will argue about anything and everything, and it seems that every difference of opinion turns into a battle. Well, there's an art to being able to disagree with someone and being able to discuss it, that it doesn't become a battle. We need to pick our battles. We know some things really matter and some things don't. But even when something is very important, and we know that there is right and there is wrong, we don't need to let it turn into a war. And we should allow the other person equal time to speak. Interrupting or dominating the conversation will not lead to conflict resolution. It may lead to the other person shutting down, and maybe there isn't an ongoing argument anymore, but there isn't conflict resolution. Ecclesiastes 3, verse 7 says, "A time to rend and a time to sow, a time to keep silence and a time to speak." Knowing when to do each is crucial in resolving conflict. When we're in conflict with another person, we can have a tendency to exaggerate or use words that aren't even true, such as, "You always do this," or "You never do that," or "Every time." Those words are not useful, not true, and they won't resolve conflict either. Another skill we can learn or develop is encouragement. Again, in Ephesians 4, verse 29, verse again, "Let no corrupt communication proceed out of your mouth, but that which is good to the use of edifying, that it may minister grace unto the hearers." Our speech should be edifying. When talking with someone, I need to think before I speak and ask myself, will what I am about to say hurt or will it help? It's so easy to be critical, but it takes some effort to be encouraging. And being encouraging doesn't mean that we tell the other person what they want to hear. It doesn't mean that we automatically justify what they're thinking or how they are feeling. That would fall into the category of flattery and possibly even speaking untruths. But it means encouraging them to do right, to do the right thing. It means complimenting them when they do well. We know everyone has something they do well, and we can always compliment them for those things. It means communicating to them that with Christ they can make it through any difficult ordeal. That means that we are looking to be part of the solution instead of adding to the problem. part of having positive communication skills means being someone who encourages people to succeed, to grow, to believe, and to be more like Christ. Let's kneel for prayer. Our Father in heaven, we come before you at the close of the service. We thank you that you are with us. You have made us the way you saw fit. We all have our areas of things we need to work on and continually deal with. And you have made each part of our lives. You have made our tongues, made our mouths, and you want us to use them for edification of other people. And we realize the danger there is in not having proper communication, but help us to ever have good communication. Help us to be an encouragement to each other. Just help us as we go from here that you would bless each one that is present. Bless each all with a desire to serve you faithfully, continually, as we relate to other people, that we would have communication that draws people to you as well, others that have not known you.